I want you to start by visualizing a blank canvas, but not for a painting. Imagine a perfectly flat atomic surface.
Like a silicon wafer.
Exactly, like a silicon wafer sitting in a vacuum chamber. Just totally empty.
It's a tabula rasa, yeah.
Exactly. Now, start a timer. And suddenly, pop a tiny seed lands on the surface.
Just an atom, or maybe a little cluster of atoms.
Right, and another one lands over here, and another one over there. And these seeds, they don't just sit there. They start to spread out, you know, sideways. They form these little flat islands.
It's a bit like a game of Tetris, but, well, only in two dimensions.
Yeah.
And instead of blocks falling, they're just appearing randomly all over the place.
And as these islands expand, they, well, they inevitably crash into each other. They merge. They form a larger layer. But here's the catch. While that first layer is still merging, new seeds are already landing on top of it.
Stirring a second layer.
And then a third. It's this chaotic piling up kind of mess.
And yet, if you zoom out way out, that chaos builds something incredibly specific. It builds a shape.
And understanding that shape, and more importantly, the roughness of that shape, that takes us on this journey from simple crystal growth into, well, the weirdest corners of mathematics.
Oh, absolutely.
We're talking about a path that leads through random matrices, algorithm theory, and somehow it ends up in quantum mechanics.
It's one of the most surprising connections in all of statistical physics.
Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're unpacking a heavyweight paper called Scale Invariance of the PNG Droplet and the Airy Process by Michael Priehofer and Herbert Spohn. It was published back in 2002.
This paper's a classic. It's really seen as a foundational text because it defined a whole new mathematical object, the Airy Process, which turns out to be this universal law for how things grow.
So our mission today is to figure out what a PNG droplet is, why the authors care so much about its rough edges, and how on earth we get from a pile of atoms to something called fermions.
It's a wild ride, but let's start with the basics, the model itself.
Right, the acronym, PNG. It stands for polynuclear growth.
Polynuclear just means many seeds.
Mm.
It's the fancy term for that visualization you started with. You have a substrate, and you get these nucleation events.
Seeds popping into existence.
Exactly. The paper sets up a very specific version of this game to make the math, well, to make it doable. They focus on a one-dimensional version. So instead of a flat plane, you're just imagining a line.
Okay, so a line.
Correct. You have a line from, say, minus T to plus T. And seeds appear above this line. When a seed lands, it instantly starts spreading left and right at a constant speed.
So if I'm an island, I'm just getting wider.
You are. And the crucial rule is what happens when the islands collide. In this PNG model, when a right-moving step from one island hits a left-moving step from another, they annihilate.
Annihilate. That sounds a little dramatic.
It just means they merge perfectly. The gap between them closes, and now you have one single, continuous flat layer.
Yeah.
The step is just gone.
Okay, I get the mechanics. Seeds land, they expand, they merge. Layers pile up. Now, the authors mention a warning right at the start about the math. Something about the number 2.
Yes, it's a little technical note that saves you a headache later.
Yeah.
They set the intensity of the nucleation. So how often seeds fall to 2 instead of 1?
Why do that?
It's purely for, well, for aesthetic reasons.
Sure.
If you leave it at 1, you end up dragging all these square root of 2 factors through every single equation in the paper.
Ah.
Setting it to 2 just makes all the final formulas clean. It's a pro tip for mathematical physics. Choose your constants wisely.
Fair enough. So we run this simulation for a long, long time, time t. We have millions of seeds. If we look at the pile from the side, what's the shape?
That is the first fundamental result. Even though the seeds fall completely randomly, the average profile of the pile forms a perfect semicircle.
A semicircle.
A droplet. That's why it's called the PNG droplet. If you plot the height, H against the position, x, it follows the curve 2 times the square root of t squared minus x squared. It looks like a dome.
Okay, so on average, nature builds a smooth dome, but we don't live in a world of averages. If I actually ran this simulation on my computer right now, the edge of that droplet wouldn't be smooth at all. It would be jagged.
Exactly. It would be rough. It would have peaks and valleys. And that roughness, those fluctuations, that's what Priehofer and Spohn are obsessed with. They aren't interested in the dome.
They're interested in the noise on top of the dome.
Because that's where the physics is.
That's where the universality is.
Precisely. The central question of this paper is there a pattern to that static? If I measure the roughness, does it follow some kind of rule?
And this brings us to that alphabet soup that every physicist knows. KPZ.
The Kardar-Parisi-Zhang Universality Class.
Right.
It's basically a bucket that contains all sorts of growth models, burning paper, spreading bacteria, growing crystals. If the growth is local and nonlinear, it usually falls into KPZ.
And the PNG model is a card-carrying member of this club.
It is. But this is where the story gets really strange. A few years before this paper, around 1999, there was a huge breakthrough by Bake, Daystent, and Johansson. They looked at the PNG droplet, but they only looked at one single point.
So like just measuring the height at the very top of the dome.
Exactly that. They asked, how much does the height at the center fluctuate? And they found that if you scale the fluctuations by time to the power of 1/3.
Which went to the 1/3. That's a very specific exponent.
It is. It's the hallmark of KPZ. And if you scale it that way, the probability distribution of the height isn't a bell curve. It's not Gaussian.
Which is what you'd normally expect, right? I mean, usually if you add up a bunch of random things, you get a bell curve.
In uncorrelated systems, yes. But this system is highly correlated. The layers talk to each other. So instead of a bell curve, what they found was the Tracy-Widom distribution.
And this is the plot twist, because the Tracy-Widom distribution wasn't invented for crystals.
No, not at all. It comes from random matrix theory. Specifically, it describes the largest eigenvalue of random Hermitian matrices.
I need you to pause there. We're talking about piling up little blocks to make a crystal. And you're telling me the math describing the height of the pile is the same math used for, what, giant spreadsheets of random numbers?
Essentially, yes. Random matrix theory was developed to understand the energy levels of heavy atomic nuclei. It's about the statistical properties of massive, complex systems. Finding it here in a simple growth model was a shock to the system.
It implies some kind of deep structural link.
It does, between how matrices behave and how surfaces grow.
Okay, so that was the state of the art before this paper. We knew that the single point at the top of the droplet behaves like a random matrix.
Right. It's like taking a photograph of the peak of Everest and analyzing the snow depth at that one single spot. But Priehofer and Spohn looked at that and said, that's not enough.
Because a crystal surface isn't just a single point. It's a whole landscape.
Exactly. If you only look at one point, you miss the spatial structure. They wanted to know about the joint distributions. You know, if the surface is high here, what does that tell me about the height a little bit to the right? How are the bumps connected?
They wanted the panoramic photo, not just the portrait.
They wanted the movie. They wanted to define the whole process across the entire curved edge.
So how do they set that up?
They zoom in. They look at the edge of the droplet near the top. They rescale the height fluctuations by T to the 1/3, just like before. But then they also rescale the lateral position, the Lecquerite distance by T to the 2/3.
Scaling is everything in this game. So they're zooming in on the noise as the droplet gets infinitely huge.
Precisely. They take the limit as time goes to infinity. And they prove that under these specific scalings, the fluctuations converge to a stationary stochastic process.
Meaning it settles into a stable statistical object. It stops changing its fundamental nature.
And they name this object the Airy process.
Denoted in the paper as A of Y. Now, is it called Airy because it's, you know, light and fluffy or happens in the air?
Huh, no, nothing so poetic. It's named after Sir George Biddle Airy, a 19th century astronomer. The math involves the Airy function, AI of X, which is a solution to a specific differential equation that just shows up a lot in optics and wave physics.
So the Airy process describes the roughness. If I could actually see the Airy process, what would it look like?
Imagine a jagged line. But, and this is important, unlike the crystal itself, the Airy process has continuous sample paths.
So it doesn't just teleport, it draws a continuous line.
It's unbroken, it flows. But it's locally very, very rough. A bit like Brownian motion. It's definitely not a smooth, polished curve.
And what about that spatial connection you mentioned, the memory?
That's the key feature. The Airy process has what we call a slow decay of correlations. Specifically, the correlations drop off as 1 over the distance squared.
Walk me through what that means for our actual crystal surface.
It means that if you have a big bump at point A, it strongly influences the likelihood of a bump at point B if they're close. But even if point B is fairly far away, there's still a faint memory of point A. The surface remembers its history over long distances, but that memory fades.
And eventually, if you go far enough, the points become independent.
Correct. The process eventually forgets. But that 1 over distance squared decay is a very specific signature. It's distinct from other kinds of noise.
So Priehofer and Spohn define this new object, the Airy process, and say this is the universal law for curved growth. But I'm looking at the section on multi-layer PNG and my head is spinning. How do they actually prove this?
Okay, this is where we had to look under the hood. To solve the math, they couldn't just look at the top surface. They had to account for the entire history of the growth. They had to look at what they call the multi-layer PNG.
Is this where the ghost layers come in?
Essentially, yes. In the math, they imagine the surface height is just index zero. But below that, there's a height line minus one, minus two, and so on, down to infinity.
But physically, those layers are buried. They're gone.
Physically, yes.
Okay.
But mathematically, the information is still there. They use an algorithm called the Robinson-Chentz-Dedenuth correspondence, or RSK.
That is a mouthful.
It's a famous cool in combinatorics. I mean, without getting bogged down in the steps, the RSK algorithm takes a sequence of events, our seeds, and maps them into a geometric shape. In this context, it dictates that when steps collide and disappear in the top layer, they trigger a virtual nucleation event in the layer below.
So the destruction of islands on top creates the seeds for the ghost layers underneath.
Exactly. It couples all the layers together, and it creates a stack of lines that can never cross each other.
And why is a stack of non-crossing lines easier to solve than just a simple crystal surface?
Because of the magic mapping, this multi-layered structure. It maps perfectly onto a problem in quantum physics involving free fermions.
Okay, so we've gone from crystals to matrices, and now we're doing quantum physics. Explain free fermions.
Fermions are particles like electrons. They obey the Pauli exclusion principle, which basically just says, get out of my space. Two fermions cannot occupy the exact same quantum state.
They're socially distanced particles.
Very strictly. And in one dimension, this means their paths, their world lines, through time, can never ever cross.
And our crystal layers.
Also, never cross. Layer minus one is always below layer zero.
I see where this is going.
The authors map the height lines of the crystal to the trajectories of these fermions. They imagine a sea of these fermions moving in a linear potential, which just means they're trying to move against a force that gets stronger the further they go, like climbing a hill that gets steeper and steeper.
So the airy process isn't just about rocks.
No. In this mapping, the actual physical surface of our crystal corresponds to the path of the very last fermion in the line. The one at the edge of the crowd.
That is wild. The roughness of a crystal surface is mathematically identical to the path of the furthest electron in a cloud.
Mathematically, yes. The airy process describes the motion of that edge fermion. And because physicists have spent decades building tools to solve fermion problems, using things like determinants and kernels, Priehofer and Spohn could just grab those tools and apply them directly to the crystal problem.
That is incredibly clever. They turned a hard geometry problem into a solvable quantum mechanics problem.
And that's the power of the paper. They derived the airy kernel, which defines all the probabilities, straight from this fermion picture.
Now, the paper mentions that this airy process connects to other things, too. It's not just crystals and fermions. They talk about directed polymers.
Yes. This is another huge area of statistical physics. Imagine a polymer chain. A long, flexible molecule trying to find its way through a messy environment.
Like a string winding through a crowded room.
A crowded room filled with obstacles or Poisson points in the math. The polymer wants to find the path that picks up the most energy or avoids the most resistance.
And the shape of that optimal path?
If you fix the start and end points, the transverse fluctuations of that path, so how much it wiggles side to side, are described by the airy process. The PNG droplet is isomorphic to this polymer problem.
Isomorphic is just math speak for basically the same thing in a different costume.
Exactly.
There's one more connection I want to touch on because it sounds like a puzzle you'd find in a magazine. The longest increasing subsequence.
Yes. Ulam's problem.
Let's break it down. Suppose I take a deck of cards numbered 1 to 10 and I shuffle them completely randomly. I lay them out in a row. Now, I want to find the longest sequence of cards that are in increasing order. They don't have to be touching, just in order from left to right.
Right. So if you have 3, 1, 5, 2, 7, the sequence 3, 5, 7 would count.
Or 1, 2, 7. The length there is 3. Now, if you do this with a massive list, say a million numbers, what's the typical length of that increasing subsequence?
There's an average length, which is 2 times the square root of n. Mm-hmm. But what about the variation? How much does it deviate from that average?
Don't tell.
It's the Tracy-Widom distribution. And if you vary the parameters in a specific way, you recover the airy process.
This is the part where my brain starts to melt a little. We have a crystal growing on a table. We have a string of molecules winding through sludge. We have a list of shuffled numbers. And we have quantum particles. And they are all doing the same thing.
That is the concept of universality. And that is the so what of this deep dive. The authors suggest that this result is likely universal for any growth model in the KPZ class that has a curved shape.
Curved shape, meaning that droplet geometry.
Right. If you grow a crystal on a flat line, the statistics are different. That's a related process. But if the macroscopic shape is curved, like a droplet spreading out from a point, the fluctuations at the edge should theoretically always be described by this Airy process.
So the Airy process is a fundamental law of nature for curved growth.
It seems to be the limit object. Just like the bell curve is the universal limit for summing up independent variables, the Airy process seems to be the universal limit for these kinds of correlated surface growth fluctuations.
So if we take a step back, why should someone listening to this care about the Airy process, apart from it being, you know, beautiful math?
Well, on a practical level, understanding surface roughness is crucial for nanotechnology. If you're growing a semiconductor film or coating a lens, you need smooth layers. The Airy process tells you the fundamental limits of that smoothness.
You know exactly how bad the surface is going to be, statistically speaking.
Right. You can't engineer away the Airy process. It's baked into the physics of growth. Mm. But on a deeper intellectual level, it reveals that randomness isn't just messy. It has a rigid, elegant architecture.
It's finding the signal and the noise.
It is. Yeah. The Airy process itself is the signal. It's the universal hum of the edge.
I love that image, the universal hum of the edge.
And frankly, the paper is technically demanding. I mean, mapping to fermions is no walk in the park. But the payoff is seeing that these completely distinct fields, combinatorics, probability, quantum mechanics, are all just different languages describing the same underlying structure.
Before we wrap up, I have to ask about the open questions. The paper ends by hinting at things they hadn't solved yet.
They do. They mention that while they nailed the droplet geometry, they didn't have the multi-point statistics for a flat interface in the same detail at the time. That requires different math.
And they also mention a lack of a differential equation for the joint distribution.
Right. For the single point, we have the Pain-Levé 2 equation. It's nice. It's clean. For the joint distribution, so point A and point B together, they have these determinant formulas from the Airy kernel, but they couldn't find a simple differential equation that describes how that probability evolves.
So there's still work to be done.
Always.
Mm-hmm.
But establishing the existence and the properties of the Airy process was a massive leap forward.
It's just funny to think that if you look closely enough at a growing crystal, you're actually watching a quantum computation of the longest increasing subsequence of a random permutation.
Nature is the ultimate computer, after all. It's computing these limits everywhere, all the time.
Well, that is a lot to digest. From droplets, to fermions, to the Airy process.
It's a journey, but a worthwhile one.
We hope this deep dive helps you see the patterns and the noise around you a little differently. Maybe next time you see frost growing on a window pane, spreading out in those little islands.
Don't just see ice. See the Airy process fighting for territory.
And know that the jagged edge of that frost is following laws just as strict as gravity.
Indeed.
Thanks for listening. Keep looking closely. You never know what universal math is hiding in the cracks.